Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, broadcast and recorded live on blogtalkradio.com from the new media and American League Baseball capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. I figure I've got 60 seconds to interest you in today's interview with Ken Blanchard. If you have to ask why 60 seconds, you obviously don't know my guest's work. He's best known as the author of The One-Minute Manager, but his latest book, Helping People Win at Work, actually screams that Blanchard is the New York Times best-selling author of over 18 million books. Now, I hope that's just hyperbole, because I've written or co-authored 10 books, many on business, and I know it's hard work. How he found time to author 18 million books, I'll never know. But I digress. Invaluable seconds are ticking away. Helping people win at work is a unique concept. It's a case study written with Gary Ridge, who, as CEO of the WD-40 company, you know, the oil company, so to speak, happens to be the subject of the case study. And this book is a follow-up to another Blanchard book, Leading at a Higher Level, which is being reissued in an expanded and revised edition later this year. Hey, good news. I introduced my guest in under a minute. Ken Blanchard, welcome to Mr. Media.
How are you, Bob? Good to be with you. How are you doing?
I'm okay. How about yourself, sir?
Well, if I was any better, I would be twins.
So, well, then we'd be talking 36 million books.
I know. I didn't write 8 million. They just happened to sell that many.
I figured, but it struck me as funny the way it appeared. I thought, oh, my God, he's written, they must be very short books.
That's right.
So, Ken, tell me, am I a manager? You heard me do a 60-second introduction. I was a one-minute introduction. Am I a manager, or do I need to be managed?
Well, you know, you're a manager as if people report to you and depend on their goal accomplishment for you. If nobody reports to you, you're kind of an individual contributor. You know, I'm more of an individual contributor. I'm the chief spiritual officer of our company, and so nobody officially reports to me because I cause too much trouble. But I'm I'm not sure I'm managing now myself.
So what do you do in the role of a chief spiritual officer for the Ken Blanchard Companies? What does that entail?
Well, I do three things. One, I leave a morning message every day for everybody, and I do three things on that. One, I tell people who to pray for. People tell me who's sick and who's hurting, and we've been doing this for about 12, 15 years, and so we get a lot of data on the power of prayer. Then I praise people, unsung heroes that people tell me about. And then I give a kind of an inspirational message about something that it's happened to me or something I've read or what have you, you know. So I got the idea, to be honest with you, Bob, from talking to Max Dupree a number of years ago. He was a legendary chairman of Herman Miller, wrote a wonderful book called Leadership is an Art. And I asked him, what is his main role as the chairman of this great company? He said he had to be like a third-grade teacher when it came to vision and values. He had to say it over and over and over and over again till people get it right. So in many ways, that's what I'm doing. And so I do that on a daily basis. Then I write and contribute materials that the company can use and all. And then I help on some sales calls and do some keynotes and just have fun. I just turned 70 a while back, and when I turned 65, I was talking to Zig Ziglar on the phone, and my wife Margie and I got invited to the 59th anniversary of his 21st birthday. And so I said, Ziggy, you got to retire. He said, there's no mention of it in the Bible, you know, except for Jesus, Mary, David, a couple of people, nobody under 80 made an impact. So he said, I'm not retiring, I'm refiring. So that's what I'm doing, I'm refiring. And working with Gary Ridge was a really wonderful refiring activity, you know, because I was really interested in finding people who were leading at a higher level, which is what our whole philosophy is, which is, you know, leading at a higher level is helping people accomplish worthwhile goals while taking into consideration the needs and concerns of all involved. So it's really about people and results, but when you put worthwhile in there, making money is not a worthwhile goal. That's one of the problems with this economic downturn we have. We had too many greedy people who were defining business as just making money, and we believe firmly in the triple or quadruple bottom line. The profit is the applause you get for taking care of your customers, creating a motivating environment for your people, and being a good citizen in your community. So we think all of those things are very important.
Yeah, you know, I spent a month last year working with Isidore Sharp, who was the founder and is still the chairman of the Four Seasons Hotels and Resorts.
Yes, he went to Cornell, and I went to Cornell. Yeah. So Izzy's a fabulous guy.
He is, and I mentioned he had written his autobiography, his book that came out earlier this year about the Four Seasons philosophy, and he believed, as you believe, that there's that, did you say triple or quadruple bottom line? That,
well,
you know, it's not just
because I had the community, but, you know, the triple bottom line is really the customers and your people and your finances, but I added being a good part of the community, and Four Seasons certainly has been that in their communities.
Well, and he was someone I've worked with who felt that way on that book, and then I work with the co-founders of the Home Depot, and I think they felt the same way. And you can see the people who believe that, they do business a completely different way than the rest of the folks.
Yes, it's a really interesting thing. I was working recently with a high-tech company who really got into the market before everybody else, and then all of a sudden competitors started coming in, and their track record around customer service is awful. And suddenly they're realizing maybe we ought to take care of our customers, you know. But now they got to change the whole culture because it hasn't been one like Izzy started at Four Seasons from the beginning, and Herb Kelleher started, you know, at Southwest Airlines and people like that. So it's a major turnaround when you're not used to taking care of the customers and the triple bottom line, suddenly realizing you might be out of business if you don't.
Can people make that switch in a company? I mean, if a company has not been, hasn't come up that way, is it possible for them to become that type of company, or do they really need to, you really need to do that from scratch?
Well, I think it's really tough with the same leadership. You know, I did a little work with Tyco, with a group of people that took over Tyco after that company went under and their presidents went to jail. And they had like 200 top managers, you know, all around. They fired probably, you know, 198 of them and had to start all over again, because I think it's hard to turn around people when, you know, you've been operating in a certain way for a long time.
Hmm. Now, I love the concept of the new book, Helping People Win at Work, because it goes from the philosophy, and I'm sure you'll correct me if I got this wrong, but it goes from the philosophy and the theories of leading at a higher level to putting it to the test, basically a case study with the WD-40 company. Is that right?
Yes, it really is, and we're looking for people who took different aspects of that and run with the ball. And one of the important things for us in leading at a higher level is when you're talking about working with your people, we think that you're their partners. You know, it's not a superior subordinate relationship. I mean, young people hate those words. Just think of them, superior, and who works with superior subordinary people? You talk to some people, I'm the, you know, what is your job? I'm the head of the department, you know, and I have hired hands. You know, they don't even give them the head. What they did at WD-40 is create a performance management system that was really a partnering relationship based off Gary Ridge was in the first master's degree class in a program that we started at University of San Diego, a Master of Science in Executive Leadership. And I've for years when I was a college professor, I would always give out the final exam the first day of class. And some of the faculty would say, what are you doing? I'm confused. And I thought I was supposed to teach these kids you are, but don't give them the questions in the final. And I'd say, not only am I going to give them the questions in the final, what do you think I'm going to do all semester? I'm going to teach them the answers, you know, because when they get to the final exam, they should get A. Life's all about getting A's, not some stupid normal distribution curve. And so that's really the philosophy. And Gary said, wow, that ought to be an organization. And so about 8 or 9 years ago at WD-40, that's exactly what he did. He set up a system that is essentially called Don't Mark My Paper, Help Me Get an A. And so this is a case study showing that. And we really hope to change the way people are evaluated in organizations so that they aren't put into normal distribution curves. Where I had a woman come up to me recently, almost in tears. She said, I wish I had, you know, seven people working for me. I said, why? She said, well, I only have six, so I can only rate one of them high, and I got another really good person, you know. And then, of course, some people like the Jack Welch philosophy, which is rank order your people, you know. Automatically get rid of about 10% of them a year.
Right.
And it just doesn't make any sense. That doesn't mean that there aren't people in the wrong job. But you don't go out with the idea that you know, you force people to make sure that some of their people aren't performing well.
How much, you know, so Gary put this system in place at WD-40 8 or 9 years ago. Other, and you mentioned Jack Welch, who, you know, has a great reputation as a very successful business guy. But how much, you know, when you put a program like this into place, how much depends on having that strong, charismatic leader to carry it through, as opposed to, you know, if go ahead.
I think it's really important, you know, that so often when people want to change things from the top, they announce the change, and then they go to a delegating leadership style and wonder why it doesn't work. So you not only need a charismatic person at the top that's interested in it, but really is interested in following through and making sure that that things are done the way you've agreed upon, and that's what Gary really has done. It's fascinating, Bob. At WD-40, every manager only fills out one performance review a year, and that's their own. You know, I always thought it was so stupid, managers sitting there filling out forms on people and everybody out there waiting, what kind of grade am I going to get? At WD-40, in the beginning of the fiscal year, every manager sits with their people, and they call them tribe members, because that was one of the cultural changes that he had to make there, because they had silos of information, and different departments would have something, and they wouldn't share it with anybody because they think it was their competitive advantage internally. So he liked the concept of a tribe, the image of the the elders sitting around the fire sharing stories with the young people about how they do things around there. And so every tribe leader sits down with each tribe member at the beginning of the year, goes over their job description or their elements of their job, and first say, is, you know, this the job you signed up for if they're new, or is this still relevant if they've had that job? And off of that, they set 3 to 5 observable, measurable goals, and if somebody accomplishes those, then that's an A. You know, so each one, like when we went to school, is, you know, you might have 5 goals. Those are like 5 different subject areas. And once they're agreed upon, now it's the job of the manager to, you know, philosophically turn the pyramid upside down and work for their people, because their job is to help them get an A. And so they'll do everything that they can to do that. They stay in constant communication. They have one-on-one meetings with each of them once every 2 weeks for 15 to 30 minutes, just to make sure that things are moving along and they're getting the help that they need. They meet on a quarterly basis. The first item of agenda is the final exam still relevant? Because a lot of times you'll set goals at the beginning of the year and then something new happens and all of a sudden you're being held accountable for goals that are no longer relevant. So they can change their final exam all the way up to the beginning of the fourth quarter. So the whole thing is set up to help the organization win. because the goals should contribute to the overall goals. And so WD-40's performance over the last 8 or 9 years has really been extraordinary, both in terms of results and people.
And is that company unique, or could this book have been any company applying your principles and those of the Ken Blanchard companies?
Yeah, it could be anybody that followed through and wanted to do something like this. But as I travel around the country and the world, still most people are being forced into normal distribution or being rank ordered, and it's completely demoralizing. There's not a lot of trust between managers and people, so it takes a special organization to do that, And so that's what I'm doing is writing about some of these companies. I'm finishing a book now with Colleen Barrett, who just stepped down as president of Southwest Airlines, and that's a wonderful example of an organization applies and uses the kind of things I'm talking about.
I want to know when you're going to write a book written for the education community about just what you're talking about, giving the final exam at the beginning of the class and then teaching towards that as the goal. So, I'll tell you what I was thinking is that I'm actually going to be teaching an adult ed course at my daughter's school in a couple of weeks on social media. And I was talking to a woman who was giving me some technical training at the school, and I said, I'm going to be talking to Ken Blanchard, and he has this idea that you give the final exam up front, and she says, oh, that's great. And I thought, okay, if it's so easy to understand, why aren't more people doing that?
Yeah, no, and I think, we're talking about doing that, it's like the dropout rate in high schools around the country, particularly urban schools and all, is incredible. Why? Because everybody does pretty well in elementary school where they deal with a whole person, but then all of a sudden they get into junior high school and boom, you got this curve going and, certain percentage you got to fail and all that kind of thing. Where I think if the students really felt that the teacher wanted them to win and was doing everything they could to help them, it doesn't mean that everybody necessarily is going to get an A, but they're going to have every shot in the world because they got somebody who really wants them to get an A. And one of the things that we wrote about in the One Minute Manager is that people who feel good about themselves produce good results, which is true. If people feel good, they'll work harder. But I actually changed that for the second book, putting the One Minute Manager, so it says people who produce good results feel good about themselves. They both work. But the one I think we need to do in schools is if you want to build the self-esteem of kids, what we got to do is help them accomplish goals, not sit there and evaluate and judge them. I mean, students are really reluctant to help each other because if I help that person, they could get an A. It means I can't get an A. Why can't it be a community of learning where everybody is trying to help everybody accomplish the goals for the particular subject they're studying?
Right. And why does it have to be a secret what I need to know to succeed at this? Why, tell me now so I can be focused on the right things. Because, that's all that seems to matter is that, by the end of the course, you're going to have to learn these 10 things. Well, tell me now what the 10 things are, and I'll know what to focus on.
Yes. No, and why not? You don't want to – what it does is it forces people not to give true, false, multiple choice tests, but give them good, tough tests, But you're there helping them throughout understand what they got to do to get a good answer or a good exam on that tough stuff that you're dealing with. So a lot of people say, you're going to lower standards. No, I think you're going to increase the standards. Because you can get tougher with them. Why? Because then everybody is on the same boat. I want to stretch you all in this class, and here's what an A looks like. And they might go, whoa, that's really going to be tough. Don't worry, I'm on your team.
Right, yeah. And now, when you first met Gary Ridge, did you ever imagine that you would wind up having this relationship with him? I mean, you meet a lot of business leaders, and you've taught a lot of courses. What is it about Gary that's so stand out?
Well, first of all, Gary didn't need a master's degree. Why did the guy who's the president of a major company need a master's degree? He's a learner, and that's what I was attracted to him. He heard that, we had a major role in this program, and he said, wow, I just really love to expand my thinking and my learning and all that kind of thing. And boy, I'm so excited about people who want to learn and look at new ways of doing things, and that's what Gary was all about, and so that's why I was attracted to him right away.
And the results that company has gotten, they're pretty substantial.
They really are, and you know, Bob, when you look at it, they have an internal survey that they send out about every 18 months. They get a 98% return on over 3,500 people. I mean, that's unheard of. Most internal surveys, if you get 40 or 45% return, you feel you're really lucky. And if they are getting, you know, 98%. And they ask them questions like, do you trust your manager? You know, 97% say, well, yeah, we trust our managers. I mean, that's just unheard of, you know. Are you clear on what you're being asked to do? You know, 98% are clear on that. Would you recommend to friends and colleagues to work at this company? You know, 95% of the people. You know, I mean, the numbers are extraordinary, as well as their performance, their stock price and all. I mean, with this tough economy, they're still holding up, you know, comparatively with other people.
Hmm. Now, I want to take advantage of having you with us for a little longer and ask you this. If a business leader only has room for, say, 10 books on his or her shelf, how many of your books and which one should they absolutely own?
Well, you know, I'm not the only, you know, the brightest bulb in town, so I don't recommend that people have to read all of mine. But, you know, the ones that I think that are probably classic of mine that they ought to do, we're thinking of doing a book of the month club now. You know, I don't know if they have those kind of things much anymore because, you know, I really have written like 50 books now. And on my birthday party, I invited all my co-authors, and about 50 of them showed up.
Wow.
65 of them. And we had a wonderful day and a half of sharing simple truths. But I think the One-Minute Manager is such a basic book that, you know, keeps on being passed on. I'm meeting people who are grandsons and granddaughters of people who read it when it came out in 82, reading it because their grandfather gave it to their father who gave it to them, you know, and that kind of thing. So I think that's a really basic one. Raving Fans, which I did with Sheldon Bowles, is all about, you know, how do you really take care of your customers and make a real difference. I wrote another one with him called Gung-Ho, which is, you know, how do you gung-ho your people? So if you're customers are in good shape, you know, how do you really keep your people motivated and all? Because in many ways we should have written Gung-Ho before Raving Fans, because if you beat your people up, they're certainly not going to take care of your customers for sure. another book that's so relevant still today, and I'm amazed how it still goes, is I had the pleasure of writing a book with Norman Vincent Peale. He was 86 years old when I met him, called The Power of Ethical Management. Integrity pays. You don't have to cheat to win. And I think that's an extraordinary one that I would have people, this is a very simple way to look at, you know, are you operating in an ethical above board way? And so it's really fun. So you're just re-motivating me to, you know, get these things all organized into different categories. Whale Done was a wonderful book I wrote with the two top whale trainers from SeaWorld because of all the secrets that I've shared with people all over the world, the one that I would hold on to if people said you can't teach anything going forward, you've taught in the past except one thing, I would hold on to the key to developing people and creating a great organization is to catch people doing things right. And I was still, as I went around the world, asking people, how do you know whether you're doing a good job? And most people were still telling me they hadn't been chewed out lately by their boss, you know. So no news is good news. And so I thought, well, they needed more reinforcement about catching people doing things right. So I was always a great fan of the Shamu show at SeaWorld, you know. And, you know, you can tell people, you know, wouldn't probably be a good idea to punish a killer whale who weighs 12,000 pounds and then tell trainers to get in the water with him. This doesn't make any sense. So if you've ever seen one of those shows, there's no negative interaction between the trainers and the whales. They first build trust with the whales. They don't do anything when they get a new one, whether it's a baby or one from another facility. For 4 to 6 weeks, they just play with them and feed them, and so they can convince them they mean them no harm. And then they accentuate the positive. If you've ever been one of those shows that they do something right or approximately right and they come back to the stage, boom, they dump a barrel of fish in their mouth, you know, rub their tongues, you know, hug them. If they do it wrong and it's not even approximately right, if they come back to the stage, if you're aware of what's going on, you'll see them put a finger up. You know, if it's one finger, it usually means, let me see that again. It's redirection. Two fingers might be, let me see your favorite trick, you know, because maybe this other one you're just learning. And so that's a pretty amazing thing, the application of that concept. So we have a book coming out in the fall called Whale Done Parenting for parents, you know, to get them to really see the power of this kind of stuff. So I'm always looking for things that can make a difference in people's lives.
What Hello? Other authors' books? Yeah, are you still there?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm there. Hello?
Ken?
Yes.
Okay, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you sound a little muffled.
Oh, I'm sorry. What other authors' books would you like to see on that bookshelf? Who else?
Well, I think Jim Collins' book, From Good to Great, is a really powerful one. I think he did great research. He has a new book out, I think, something like Why Do Great Companies Fail? You know, when he says it takes a lot of people to go from good to great, but only one lousy manager to take a great company and put it in the toilet. And so Collins is really sharp. Tom Peters, I think, you know, his stuff on, you know, In Search of Excellence was his classic, but his work on innovation, I think, is really terrific. I think Steve Covey's book on the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, I have a lot of admiration for Steve. I love Patrick Lencioni. I think his 5 Dysfunctions of a Team and the 5 Temptations of a CEO and, you know, Murder by, you know, Death by Meetings. And he's to me, the brightest young guy out there that's really helpful. And then I've, you know, gotten into some of the spiritual stuff, too. I think Laurie Beth Jones, you know, Jesus CEO is a pretty powerful book, just showing some real elements of leadership. I've also written a book called Lead Like Jesus, not to convert people, but here's a guy who has 12 incompetent people that you never would have hired. They were willing to give their lives for the cause. So there's a lot of good folks out there. Rosa Beth Cantor Moss at Harvard has written some really good stuff on change.
Well, we're almost out of time. I have one more question I want to ask you. You have a Twitter identity. I wonder, do you have an opinion about where social media should fit into a company's business behavior and identity?
Well, I think if you deny the power of this, you're really, you know, turning your back. My wife, Margie, heads up the Office of the Future at our company, because I think the present and the future are banging into each other all the time, and you need a group of people that are out there studying what's out there that could really impact your business. And so one of the things that they really studied was all the social media and all that kind of thing. And look how, you know, Obama won president. How did he beat first, Hillary Clinton and then beat McCain? Because they were running 1990 campaigns in 2008, you know. And here's Obama using the social media and using everything out there to communicate with people. I mean, look at him now. You know, he wants to get his health plan through, whether you like it or not. You know, he's going to be a tough opponent. Why? Because he's out there, and he's blogging, and he's Twittering, and he's face-to-face with people. So I think it's very important that we don't turn our back on technology and ways that we can communicate The young people are so different, Bob, as you well know. You ask them if they would work on a problem, they don't go talk to their boss or colleagues. They go online. You know, they got chat rooms. They got all kinds of stuff. It's just amazing when people have grown up on the computer are working with you.
Well, folks, listen, you can find Ken Blanchard and Gary Ridge's new book, Helping People Win at Work, at great bookstores everywhere or at Mr. Media, mrmedia.com or amazon.com. And you can learn more about Ken's millions of books at his company website, which is www.kenblanchard.com. That's solid, kenblanchard.com. And, of course, you can follow Ken on Twitter at www.twitter.com/KenBlanchard. Ken, it was an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show, and thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Well, thank you, Bob. Appreciate it, and keep up the good work.
You too, sir. Many more books. Take care.
Okay.
And, folks, please think about writing an online review of Mr. Media, casting a vote for Mr. Media, or marking Mr. Media as one of your favorites. Whether you listen on Blog Talk Radio, TrueSlant, Digital Journal, Vox, Podcast Pickle, Mediafly, Blueberry, Zencast, Zimbio, Current, or Odeo. And subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. Or subscribe to Mr. Media's blog on the Amazon Kindle Reader. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman. Thank you so much for joining us today. I always appreciate when you give up a little piece of your day to spend it with us. Thanks for listening, everybody.